Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Y es que es normal. ¡Qué tensión, por Dios! ¡Qué tensión! ¡Qué manera de sufrir! ¡Qué manera de salvarse!
Hello everyone and welcome to La Liga Lowdown for this second part of our preview for the season. I'm Matt Clark, and today I'm joined by Rory Barlow, one of our co-hosts for the season. Rory, how are you?
I'm absolutely delighted to be here. I am a little bit sad still about Leo Messi, and I think I might be for quite a while, because he's been a part of La Liga and my life for many, many years. But we are here to talk about the bottom half of La Liga this time, and I'm more than happy to say I'm very excited about many of these teams.
Yeah, you're right. I think the Messi news will still take a while to soak in fully. You're absolutely right. We're going to be talking about the bottom half of the table this time, the relegation battle and the promoted clubs, and we'll have some insight from a couple of fans too. Okay, so why don't we start with the opening game? Getafe are visiting Valencia at Mestalla, and it's the Bordalas derby. We've had a lot of change at both clubs. So, Rory, what's your take on the summer of change at both Getafe and Valencia?
This is a spicy tie to start the La Liga season, isn't it? I think, although it might not be the most glamorous, and certainly Los Che are not as glamorous as they used to be, this could be a very fun one. José Bordalás, he's a character. He's very particular and very idiosyncratic, as one can see by his hair and his look. He does not cut the figure of a man who's aging into his 50s. But I think Valencia is a really curious club for him to take over, in the sense that often he wouldn't get the chance to take over a club like Valencia without having another stepping stone from Getafe. And so he gets some better players. He gets to work with Gonzalo Guedes. He gets to work with the likes of Carlos Soler. And he gets to work for a club that has a bigger stadium, and we'll talk about the impact of fans later, but you have that increased fan base. And I think Bordalás is a man who knows what he wants. He's very focused. He knows what identity he wants to inspire within Valencia. And so for me, it'll be kind of a Mourinho-like effect, in the sense that if he can convince the players, because Bordalás, as much of a reputation as he has in Spain, he's perhaps not the big name that Valencia are used to. If he can convince the players to get behind his idea and buy into what he is selling them, then I think Valencia could turn into a real sort of a bad boy of the league, and in the same way that Getafe were, somebody that nobody wants to face. And so, yeah, I think it'll be really interesting just to see the start that they have and what Bordalás can do when he has sort of a better squad, because Getafe was a limited budget at all times, and although he got good results, he was working with sort of limited resources. I think he must have come in with certain assurances, and granted, it appeared as though Javi Gracia had those assurances and they weren't fulfilled last season. We know Lim does not have a track record of investing in his managers, but investing in players and giving the manager sort of the squad to deal with. I think, yeah, those assurances must have been made, and he must have had some demands. I don't think Bordalás is the kind of character that would have been desperate enough to completely submit and say, I'm happy to come in and see whatever you've given me, and I'll just deal with that and work with whatever you give me. I think he would have said, either retain these players and I want to work with them, or if you're going to sell them and need to have some reinforcements. But as we know, those promises have been broken before. It'll be, as I say, he does have better players, I think, at Valencia still than Getafe. And so even if he doesn't get huge reinforcements, the young talent that he has there is still quite a prospect for someone like Bordalas, who's come up right through the regional divisions in Spain.
Yeah, he's had a phenomenal coaching journey, and we did a special podcast on him last season, so check that out if you haven't already. As for Getafe then, they've also got a new face back at the helm, but it's an old face. Michel, he is back after 10 years, and it's been an interesting summer market for them. They brought in Carles Aligna, Vitolo, among others. So the squad profile there, it's very different, isn't it? Again, it's going to be a sea change at the Coliseum Alfonso Pérez this season.
Definitely. I think it's definitely a transition season for them, in the sense that they're clearly looking to go in a different direction from Bordalas. And Michel has had great success at Getafe before. Not so much since he left, it has to be said. Aligna, I think when he and Kubo came in the winter window for Getafe, that marked the direction that Ángel Torres wanted to go in. And even if Bordalas wasn't happy about it, I think Michel will appreciate that he has Vitolo and Carles Aligna to work with. Whether it's going to be a success, I don't know what you think, Matt. I think sometimes when these new directions come in and it tends to be a move towards a more freer style, it can go pretty wrong, because Getafe, they didn't score a lot of goals last season, and they might score a few more, but they can't afford to open up at the back too much. I don't know what your thoughts on that are, Matt.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think be careful what you wish for is the phrase that comes to mind. I think it was 21 games they didn't score in last season in La Liga, which is staggering when you think about it. but as you say, the defence was still pretty strong, so that kind of, they ground out enough points that way. Having said that, I do like the ambition, I have to say. I do like the ambition to try and play a more attractive style of football, to try and be, basically just to get rid of this bad boy image that people have of them, because for so long they've just been seen as the kind of the kick merchants, the foul merchants of La Liga. And there's so much more than that. I mean, Marco Correa, for example, is a fabulous footballer, and he might leave, of course. He's been linked with a move to Brighton. What remains to be seen whether that is borne out. But, you know, if he stays, and with the players we've already mentioned, that's some talent in that squad. So, yeah, for me, I'm quite optimistic about Getafe. But at the same time, with that caveat that, you know, 10 years on, be careful what you wish for, etc. Speaking of Valencia, then how about their city rivals, Levante? They were so close last season to finishing above Lecce for the first time in their history. But after the Copa del Rey run, they just seem to run out of steam at the end of the season. What's your take on Levante ahead of this season?
Levante, in recent seasons, and Paco Lopez, the manager in particular, have carved out a soft spot in my heart, because I really liked what they were doing, and I admired their approach and the idea that Paco Lopez pursued. They do worry me a little, because, as you say, they fell off at the end of the season, and it seems like there's maybe a little bit of staleness around Levante. Paco Lopez made a name for himself playing free-flowing football with a squad that perhaps wasn't as moneyed as others. And that was admirable. I think he reverted a little bit last season, went a bit more counter-attacking. We saw the development of Jorge de Frutos was key to that, and he really came through. But once you lose the sort of essence of your style, and the thing that Paco Lopez made his name for, can he strike the balance again between that without completely losing his own direction? I don't know. I'm interested to see it. I think their cup run last season somewhat saved their season and made their season seem a lot more successful than it was. But as you say, they did fall off last season, and without that fall off, they could have finished much higher.
Definitely. As you say, Jorge de Frutos was certainly one that did bear fruit for Levante last season, pardon the pun. interesting though, the last few days have been some developments similar to Barcelona in many ways. It must be a Blaugrana thing, I don't know. But there's been talk that Levante are going to be unable to register some of their new signings. They were unveiled at the stadium, and President Quique Catalan, He did say that there are difficulties, he admitted to those, but he was confident that it will be sorted before their opening game. Among them, of course, Roberto Soldado, who could inject some more vitality into that attack. I know he's getting on, but he's shown that he can do it at that level. And being back home, he will feel that he can still deliver for another couple of seasons. So, I think Levante is a very strange case. They have a habit of being a giant killer. Again, that's been to Barcelona's detriment a few times lately, and also Real Madrid, in fairness. And they took 4 points of Atletico de Madrid last season. So they are a side that can hurt the big teams. And I think a lot of neutrals will still enjoy watching Levante play. They have some fabulous footballers in the midfield in particular. And of course, El Comandante, José Luis Morales, is still going strong. I think the neutrals, they're going to be the team to watch though, still, no?
They could be, yeah. I think, as you say, they are having difficulties registering players. And I wonder how many of those saleable assets. José Campaña spent most of last season out injured, but if they do get him back, he really injects something into their midfield because, I mean, he was the first Levante player capped for Spain in about 60 years or so, which just shows how good he was at his peak. If he does go, then that sort of solves the problem, but you wonder if they maybe have to dig into Enes Bardi or one of their other talents like Jorge de Frutos to maybe try and register those players and solve those wage issues. I think it could go one of two or three ways with Levante this season, and I'd certainly be interested to watch because Paco Lopez has always come up trumps in the last three or four seasons.
Yeah, he's been very impressive, and even last season when it looked like he was on the knife edge and seemed like he was going to get the boot, the president maintained faith in him and he turned it around. Espanyol finished rock bottom of La Liga in 2020, having endured a desperately poor campaign. But they bounced straight back as Segunda champions and are now back where they belong. Sam Leveridge caught up with Jeff Gillingham to assess Los Pericos.
Hi Jeff, thanks for joining us. Great to have you with us after a year away. So what's happened over the last 12 months for Espanyol? They kind of won Segunda, but start stumbling over the finishing line and winning the league at Alcorcón despite losing. What happened in Segunda for Espanyol?
Yeah, so I think ultimately it was a case of being able to keep hold of most of our main first team players. I mean, obviously RDT was the main one. But then there were times in the season where we just kind of, I don't know, just knew we could walk through games and still get a positive result. So it kind of got to the point where, especially towards the end, once we'd actually sealed promotion and there was a title still up for grabs, it was kind of like, well, we've done the hard bit now. We can afford to relax a little. But then, so the way we ended the season wasn't obviously the most positive, but I think ultimately the goal was just to come up at the first time of asking and
you mentioned they're kind of the guys that you kept hold of. What about Raul de Tomas? Obviously he's kind of the star man at Espanyol. How did he get on?
Yeah, so he did really well. I think he got, I can't remember exactly how many, but it was over 20 goals. And it was, well, the front three we had of him and Barba and Javi Puado was kind of, I mean, that's like a first division front three in my opinion. And they were just linked up really well, and yeah, it just kind of allowed us to, when you've got that firepower in attack, it's kind of like, I don't know, like when Barcelona had the MSN, like you can afford to have the rest of the team have an off game because you know that they'll take one of the few chances that might arrive.
And so comparing Espanyol now to the Espanyol that went down, what would you say the biggest changes in the team?
Well, when we went down, we were able to get rid of some of the dead wood. So as much as I love him, Javi Lopez, it was maybe 4 years too late in terms of him going. Then there was Victor Sanchez. It was just kind of like those fringe players that didn't really need anymore. Like we've still got Didac, who I'd put in that group. But at least he's sort of behind Adria Pedrotha now. And yeah, ultimately, I think the main thing was we kept hold of our key players, which I didn't expect to have happen. But then...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that it kind of seems like you got rid of the dead wood, kept hold of the key players and gave some chances to the younger players.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, a right back, for instance, it was quite nice because we could like alternate between Miguelon and Oscar Hill. But then you also had, like, Katie Bade did well when he came in. Obviously, going down a division allowed Javi Pardo to have more minutes. And then, yeah, Mbaba looked more comfortable. So I honestly think, though, if COVID hadn't happened, that we would have stayed up. But, I mean, there's nothing you can do about that now.
No, but back in Primera now. And what do you think, then, of Vicente Moreno? Obviously, came in from Mallorca and got the job done.
Yeah.
Are Espanyol fans convinced, or...?
I think there's doubts. I mean, I see sometimes, well, after some of the results, especially towards the end of the season, you started seeing in group chats, maybe when we go up, we need to change manager, etc. He hasn't done anything terribly wrong. There were a few moments more towards the first half of last season when I started thinking, Jesus, like, this is not going how I thought it would. Because I figured we were just going to, I don't know, finish 30 points ahead in first. And yeah, it didn't exactly happen like that. So I get the feeling that if we have a poor run of results, then obviously he'll come under pressure. But for the time being, I think obviously he's done the job that he had to do, which was get us out of the second division. So yeah, I think he's safe for now.
Yeah, and obviously after last time in Primera with the managerial merry-go-round before relegation, you don't want to repeat of that. And what's the view on the owners? Because obviously there was a lot of anger with them with relegation, but they kind of stuck with the club and they haven't pulled out like other foreign owners have. So
yeah,
are fans still angry with them? Or
I don't think so. I don't really see much directed towards the owners. Like, if anything, the fact we were able to keep hold of people like RDT and Barba, Dardair, David Lopez, even Diego Lopez, they're all sort of big earners. So I know we had large parachute payments, but I'm sure the owners sort of had to put a bit of their own money in or whatever. But I think, I think part of the reason we haven't really invested this summer is because of, like, China's put restrictions on how much you can spend on, like, foreign aid type stuff. So like Inter have had the same issue. So yeah, we haven't exactly made any huge signings yet. It's just been, we kept our three low knees, so Di Mata, Miguelon and Vadillo, and then I think we got Sergi Gomez from Sevilla for like 1 million euros. So
yeah, I was gonna say, are you expecting more signings? Does Espanyol need more signings?
I mean, obviously, I'd like another signing or two, but I don't know. I wouldn't be opposed to another goalkeeper just because I lost faith in Diego Lopez now. I mean, any shot from distance, it's like he doesn't see it coming or he's too slow to get down. And then, he's okay, but he's not. If we're going to really start pushing, I think you need someone better. But yeah, I think the main goal of this summer is just try and keep hold of everyone, because at the start of the summer, we kept being linked to strikers. And I thought, oh God, RDT is going to go. But he's still here. And yeah, all the time we've got this front three, I'm quite happy.
And so what's the aim for Espanyol this season, Jeff? What would you be happy with?
Well, survival, obviously. But then I think Europe's probably beyond us, to be honest. I think if we could finish between, 10th and 14th, that would be a good season. And then hopefully build on that, like, the following year. But, I'm not too sure in terms of... I mean, obviously, there's still a few weeks to go in the transfer window. So if we lose RDT on transfer deadline day, then all of a sudden it's just survival. But if we... I don't really know who's available that we could realistically bring in. It'll probably be like a low knee or something, I imagine. I think just around mid-table would be a pretty good season for us.
Fantastic. Yeah, fingers crossed, and then it'll just be like the last couple of seasons never happened for Espanyol.
Yeah. Well, luckily no fans saw last season, so it's almost like it never happened.
Can dream. Great. No, thank you very much for your time, Jeff, and great to have you with us.
Perfect. Cheers, Sam.
We're going to take a short break now, but when we come back, we'll talk about the rest of the clubs in the bottom half. Don't go away.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back. Still to come in part two, we look at the other promoted sides and the rest of the clubs hoping to avoid the dreaded drop. Mallorca went down along with Espanyol, but they had a strong Segunda campaign to win automatic promotion at the first attempt. To see how they might fare this time around, I spoke to Paul McGarrigy, football writer and Mallorca fan. So I'm here with Paul McGarrigy. He is the senior football writer for Over the Bar, and he is the man from Manchester who supports Mallorca. Thank you for coming on, Paul. How are you?
Thanks for having me on. I'm doing great. Thanks, Matt.
Good to hear. So for those listeners that haven't been following Segunda, how would you describe Mallorca's promotion campaign back in La Liga at the first attempt?
Yeah, so it started off with bit of a disappointment on the opening match day, losing 1-0 at home to Rayo Vallecano, who obviously we would see as a direct rival. But then Mallorca went on a 17 game or 18 game undefeated streak. So it got to a slow start, but it was all charred from then on. Bit of a wobbly period just after Christmas, but enough to get over the line and get the promotion sealed early.
Fantastic stuff. You obviously had a managerial change, which was quite controversial at the time, with Vicente Moreno moving to Espanyol and Luis García Plaza coming in to Mallorca. So how do you see him as a leader for the next season coming up?
Well, so Luis García Plaza's appointment probably raised a few eyebrows because of his recent track record. Obviously, been in China and the Middle East either side of 1 month in charge of Villarreal. But he seems to have brought a calm and measured approach. He's certainly got the fans on side, and it looks and seems very much like the club hierarchy with him as well, not to mention the chemistry that he's built in the squad. So he's brought a great vibrance, I think, to Mallorca. And he's a pragmatic manager, so he's one of those that you feel like you're trusting him because he plays a sort of horses for courses style of football.
Great stuff. How do you see the squad then as we move towards the start of the season? Very close now. How does Mallorca's lineup and their wider squad, how does that stack up?
So the squad going into the season, it feels, in my view, it feels a little bit more complete than the last time Mallorca came up. I know there's a few people that disagree with me with that, but I've got my reasons for it. I just feel like all round the squad is a bit more balanced. We've brought in some really good additions, particularly in the fullback. You know, we've got Jaume Costa, Pablo Maffeo, Dominic Grave could be a really good addition in terms of goalkeeper. The midfield is packed with talent, in my opinion. I'd say, you know, a lot of people were talking of Modric, Cruz and Casemiro as being the best midfield in Spain last season, but I would say that the best midfield in Segunda, at least, was Salva Sevilla, Dani Rodriguez and Ruiz de Galarreta at Mallorca. Perhaps the Poundland equivalent of the midfield trio that Madrid had. Or Mercadona equivalent, I perhaps would say, you know. But I think that there is a striker that's missing, and I think there'll be some movement before the end of the window, and possibly another winger who a lot of people could probably guess Mallorca are very interested in bringing him. He's just had a brilliant spell at the Olympics.
Ah, indeed. I did see a rumour that Mallorca were potentially interested in signing Simi from Serie A. He scored 20 goals in it last season, but that trail does seem to have run cold. In terms of goals, as it stands at the moment, I know you said you want to bring in a couple more to kind of boost that up. Where are the goals coming from as it stands right now?
Last season, a lot of it came from midfield. Salva Sevilla, I think, got 7. Dani Rodriguez got a good number. And Amath Ndai, off the left wing, looked a bit more like a number 9 at times rather than a number 11 or a left winger, I should say. And Abdon Prats was really, his goals weren't the best in terms of quantity, but in terms of quality and importance, he was instrumental in us coming back up.
Brilliant. And I've seen you signed Angel Rodriguez from Getafe on a free. How important do you think he'll be in terms of his experience?
I think experience is the right word. You know, he only got a handful of goals last season, but I would wager that this Mallorca team would create more chances for him, even with limited time on the pitch, than a Pepe Bordalas team. And I think he'll bring the experience head, but it'll also allow us to have a slightly different option, particularly, say, if we go into the last 20-15 minutes of a game as well. It'll be more of a variety than what we've currently got.
Variety is the spice of life, as they say. Now, speaking as a fan, of course you are based in the UK, but in terms of the match-going experience at Son Moix, what's the situation there regarding fans and how many will be able to attend?
I've only really heard negative things from a fan point of view, from people on the island, particularly talking about the limited numbers and the fact that social distancing measures are obviously still in place, despite the fact that, you know, you can go to concerts now, you can go to bars, you can sit with your friends and have a drink, but in football you've got to be socially distanced in the stadium with masks on, and it's not going down particularly well. It's not been popular on the island, but I think there's a level of understanding there, but there's certainly frustration.
Yeah, it does seem a very kind of disconnect between other cultural aspects and the football. Well, let's end on a positive then. As a Mallorca fan, how excited are you for the start of the season?
I'm very excited, and I'm feeling a lot more optimistic this time round as well. Like I said, I think the squad has got a bit more to offer. I think that there's going to be one or two additions that will help cement Mallorca's top flight status for this campaign. And I'm feeling optimistic about the fact that there might be at least 3 teams that will be less well-equipped than us for the Primera.
Okay, well, thank you once again for joining us, Paul. It's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thanks very much.
The third promoted club last season was Rayo Vallecano, and it was a bit of a surprise because going into the final match day, they weren't the fancied side to take that final playoff spot, but take it they did, and they worked wonders. They came through both the semi-final and the final with impressive young coach Andoni Iraola leading them back into the top flight. The question, I suppose, is, are they back too soon? Are they ready? That is the big doubt. There have been some off-the-pitch tensions. The fans, as we know, are very vocal, very politically aligned, and that has led to some tensions with their president, and it's safe to say they don't get on at all. So if they can avoid any problems there, yeah, to put it mildly, if they can avoid problems there, that will hold them in great stead. But in footballing terms, they are looking a little bit light, aren't they, Rory?
Certainly for me, and we've seen this before with Elche, particularly last season, who also scraped into the playoffs and then scraped through the playoffs and managed to stay up. So history kind of instructs us, because Elche weren't the only case of this. There were several, I think it's three or four of the last sides that have been promoted through the playoffs have managed to stay up. And so it is instructive that these teams perhaps maybe get a ride of the momentum that they had and the sort of feel-good factor of coming through that adversity. On the flip side, you do have to even that out with the fact that they cannot be prepared for this season in the same way that the other clubs were. They don't have a squad that would have finished in the top three in the Segunda, and so you have to measure that up against whether they can stay up. Iraola has shown himself to be very impressive, and that has to be said. I watched some of the playoff final against Girona, and they showed a lot of game smarts in that second leg to close out that leg. And that is the sort of thing that can really hold them in good stead. I think Iraola is the star of this show, and they could require some investment, though. I think you need one or two signings to sort of get you over the ledge and score you a few goals in the same manner that Lucas Boyer did for Elche last season.
Yeah, so well, as you say, if Elche can do it, why can't Rayo? I agree that Iraola is the jewel in their crown. And we were kind of brought to awareness of his talents the season before, because he was the coach of Mirandés. He kept them in Segunda, but even more impressively, you could argue, he knocked out three La Liga sides on their way to the semi-finals of the Copa del Rey, which was a very, very impressive feat. And many people are looking at him as a very bright prospect in the coaching world. And again, he might not be at Rayo for very long, but if he can keep them up, he's definitely going to stay in La Liga.
Certainly, yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think if he does keep them up, it might not be too long before we see him back in Bilbao.
Indeed, yes, that's definitely one to watch. That could be an interlinked story as we go through. Now let's turn to Pamplona. Osasuna, they had a pretty decent season last time out, and they've been pretty bold in the market. They've exercised a purchase option on Ante Budimir, who scored a shedload of headed goals last season. And with a fit again, Chimi Avila, the sky really is the limit. Add to that Kike Garcia from Eibar, they have a very impressive strike force, don't they, Rory?
Certainly. And I think with these functional sides, we talked about Getafe and their lack of goals. With these functional sides that are well-drilled, defensively solid, and will look to exploit spaces on the break or just in general when they come up against a team that perhaps doesn't have quite the defensive solidity, if they can add goals, if they can find a method of regularly sort of scoring against the opponent and putting the opponent on the back foot, I think that's where they have real joy. And we saw Yagoba Alassate's side come through. They really went through the mill in the first half of the season, and they looked... They weren't playing too badly, but they looked almost like they were dead and gone. But they managed to come back from that, climb up the table. And by the end of the season, they were the Osasuna that we're sort of used to in the 21st century, of the team that's gritty, hard to beat, not pleasant at all to play at. And we saw that against Real Madrid in the sort of freezing conditions and this rock-hard pitch. And it was just dire for Real Madrid to try and play on it. And Osasuna, even without the fans, I think they were lapping that up. And so I think a full El Sadar on a cold winter's night is a pretty amazing prospect for us, and a pretty fear-inducing prospect for others.
Yes, very daunting. Very much roll your sleeves up and get stuck in, boys, kind of approach. You touched on El Sadar there. It's a fantastic stadium. It's been renovated and finally we're going to have some fans back. And just in general, among these clubs in the bottom half, how big an impact do you think fans will have this season? Because as we know, in some stadiums, the atmosphere can be a lot better than in others. And I'm thinking about in terms of Cadiz, the fans are going to be back there for the first time in La Liga for 15 years. At Mendizorroza for Alaves, they are definitely the 12th man there in a very kind of British style atmosphere. Which clubs do you think will benefit most from the fans being back?
Certainly, the north of Spain has always had a relationship with British football, and the atmosphere that you see produced in British stadiums is not dissimilar in the Basque Country. You mentioned El Sadar there. I think it's hard to look beyond a revamped El Sadar as one of the venues that will most benefit from that. Alaves, Mendizorroza, as you mentioned. I think those northern clubs, Athletic, I think will get a huge boost from it as well. It was always an intimidating place to go for the big sides, certainly when it was full at El Catedral. And so, yeah, I think those northern clubs will certainly see the benefit. It's more the Madrid clubs and sort of the bourgeoisie of the La Liga, so to speak, who've maybe not had that scary atmosphere or that intense atmosphere to go into. So, yeah, I think those clubs, but we mustn't forget about the Seville clubs either, where it will be absolutely rocking when it's full.
Oh, absolutely. We've missed those derbies with fans packed in, haven't we? Absolutely. Okay, let's turn our attention to a couple of clubs that just about stayed up last season, by the skin of their teeth. We've got Alaves and Elche, just about managing, as you say, to stay above water. Elche, of course, on the final day of the season with that win to keep them up. Huesca, unfortunately, the ones to go down on that occasion. So looking at these two sides, they were both rejuvenated by managerial changes, I think it's fair to say. Javi Calleja coming in at Alaves absolutely turned them around. They were just a different side under him. And Elche, again, club legend, Fran Escribar. Well, I say legend, he's more like a god there, isn't he, at Elche?
Certainly.
The question is, can either of these sides avoid the drop again? Can they look any more beyond just fighting it out again?
For Alaves, I'll preface what I'm about to say with the fact that I'm a real big fan of Javi Calleja. I think he's a good manager. He clearly has the affection of his players, certainly from his stints in Villarreal and Alaves. He came back to Villarreal after being sacked a month after, and that shows the sort of strength of him as a man manager, that he managed not to lose the dressing room over that spell. So I have a lot of belief in Javi Calleja, but I fear that it might be a case of the boy who cried wolf for Alaves, because they've just been down there and they've been fighting it out for so many seasons recently. They've been saved by Joselu. In many cases, he's the goal man for them. He is the person that gets them out of trouble. He's had a few difficulties this summer. His agent has certainly been auguring for a move away from Alaves. And so I worry that this might be the season that gets them. The same thing happened for me with Valladolid last season. They were fighting it out. They were gritty and they were effective. But they never had a season of comfort, which is what I think. A season of comfort takes the pressure off you, maybe sort of gives you a little bit of breathing space and allows you to escape that drop zone. I wonder if Alaves do get sucked into it.
Well, as you say, I think it's going to be difficult for both of these clubs for the reasons you've given. Joselu is massive. If he stays, that gives them a fighting chance, I think. We've come to the end of our preview. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks to Rory, Sam, Jeff and Paul. We'll be back with our Match Day Recap podcast, rounding up all the action and talking points from the opening weekend. Until then, head over to our Twitter feed, at La Liga Lowdown, and check out our website, laligalowdown.com, where you'll find comprehensive club-by-club previews. The start of the season is imminent, and we all feel like children on Christmas Eve. We kick off with a tasty fixture at Mestalla, Valencia against Getafe. ¡Vamos! El golpeo, tocó en Hugo Duro, que le negó el gol a su compañero. Y ahora la réplica inmediata del Valencia. Qué bonito es el fútbol cuando se vuelve loco. Envío al área Gameiro Rodrigo. ¡Oh! ¡Bueno, bueno, bueno! ¡Bueno, bueno, bueno! ¡Bueno, bueno, bueno, bueno!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.